So today's verse is Canto 2, Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 2, Chapter 5, entitled The Cause of All Causes. We are reading text 26 to 29, and we have all the verses. Amazing. This is really good effort, so thank you, whoever wrote all these verses. It's very kind of you to write all of them. Also means I have to get to know the first three, because I only thought about the last one. So thank you very much. So I think now that we have it all, we should just recite it all, because we have it all. So we'll just do it very quickly. Maybe we'll just do it once, and then we'll do the word for word. So we'll do the translation. Because the sky is transformed, the air is generated with the quality of touch. And by previous succession, the air is also full of sound and the basic principles of duration of life, sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. When the air is transformed in course of time and nature's course, fire is generated, taking shape with the sense of touch and sound. Since fire is also transformed, there is a manifestation of water, full of juice and taste. As previously, it also has form and touch and is also full of sound. And water, being transformed from all variegatedness on earth, appears odorous, and as previously, becomes qualitatively full of juice, touch, sound, and form, respectively. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The whole process of creation is an act of gradual evolution and development from one element to another, reaching up to the variegatedness of the earth and so many trees, plants, mountains, rivers, reptiles, birds, animals, and varieties of human beings. The quality of sense perception is also evolutionary, namely generated from sound, then touch, and from touch to form. Taste and odor are also generated along with the gradual development of sky, air, fire, water, and earth. They are all mutually the cause and effect of one another, but the original cause is the Lord Himself in plenary portion, as Mahavishnu lying in the causal water, in the causal water of the Mahatattva. As such, Lord Krishna is described in the Brahma Samhita as the cause of all causes, and this is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8 as follows. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. The qualities of sense perception are fully represented in the earth, and they are manifested in the other elements to a lesser extent. In the sky there is sound only, whereas in the air there are sound and touch. In the fire there are sound, touch, and shape, and in the water there is taste also, along with the other perceptions, namely sound, touch, and shape. In the earth, however, there are all the above-mentioned qualities with the extra development of odor also. Therefore, on the earth, there is a full display of variegatedness of life, which is originally started with the basic principle of air. Diseases of the body take place due to derangement of air within the earthly body of the living beings. Mental diseases result from special derangement of the air within the body. And as such, yogic exercise is especially beneficial to keep the air in order so that diseases of the body may become almost nil by such exercises. When they are properly done, the duration of life also increases, and one can have control over death also by such practices. A perfect yogi can have command over death and quit the body at the right moment, when he is competent to transfer himself to a suitable planet. The bhakti yogi, however, surpasses all the yogis, because by dint of his devotional service, he is promoted to the region beyond the material sky and is placed in one of the planets in the spiritual sky by the supreme will of the Lord, the controller of everything. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivashari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak on this intricate verse. I seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas to bless me to speak something that can be of some benefit to everyone present and also for my purification. When I was given this verse on Sunday, I was at the Haveli and I was... Niskinchana Prabhu and his good wife, Ujeshwari Mataji, were speaking with each other, and I needed to find my daughter's coat, because she had left it at the Boy George program on Saturday night. So I just approached them, hey, do you know where I can go find my coat? And they said, yeah, go to reception. By the way, can you give class on Wednesday? And I'm like, Wednesday? Oh, no. And I was like, phew, I've got breakfast transfer. Everything's going okay. I can't do it. And then Niskinchan was going to do Thursday. And suddenly he did yesterday. And I'm doing today. I said, okay, it'll be nice to speak a verse. It'll be nice to give a class. Haven't done this for a little while. And then I just quickly checked the verse. And I'm like, oh, it's about creation. What am I going to say? It's a very deep topic. It's a very intricate topic. And to be honest, I'm by no means a scientist. And if we're looking for some deep explanation of all these different elements coming into place, I'm probably not the right person, but you can refer to Niskinchan's class yesterday. That was really, really good. I was listening to that while I was doing the breakfast transfer. So here, the conversation between Narada Muni and Lord Brahma is taking place. Narada Muni is asking Lord Brahma these questions about how creation takes place. It's said that Narada Muni is very ecstatic in this conversation. Why? Because they are discussing the glories of the Lord. They're discussing the greatness of the Lord. So much tushanticha ramanticha. You know, there's so much, the devotees take great delight in speaking the glories of the Lord. So Narada Muni is wondering, so why is it that the Lord is making such elaborate plans? I mean, it's quite elaborate, isn't it? All this is going on. Before reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, we may have never even thought about sound and ether and touch and air and fire being form and odor and earth and taste and water. All these things are just in one sense, oh, okay, the Lord created it and it's just, this is all part of it. You know, it's just all part of it. And here we're getting the intricate information as to how step by step things are actually coming into the creation. How from Mahavishnu, then we've got the expansions, and the Mahatattva comes along, and then from Mahatattva we have Ahankara, and then from Ahankara mixed with the different modes of material nature, we have these different elements. And not only the elements, how we can perceive the elements. So for example, we can perceive sound through ether. We can perceive sound through ether. And sound is this the creative force, if you like. Everything started with sound. So Narada Muni is wondering, like, why such elaborate plans? There's a material world being created, and such elaborate plans are being made for the jiva to forget the Lord. It's like he's doing so much just to help us forget him. Why is he doing that? What's he doing? And this is actually the mercy of the Lord. He's a desire fulfiller. We have a desire, and the Lord is going to fulfill our desire, and is going to give us an opportunity to fulfill our desire in such a way that we can experience a fraction of that desire and a huge weight of, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? So even a prison isn't just made. It's not just like, here's a hall and that's your prison. No, a prison has to have high security. A prison has to have different rooms. A prison has to have different features. And there are different features in the prison. Apparently you get PlayStation now in a prison. So there's some enjoyment. There's some enjoyment in the prison. But overall, the prison is supposed to be designed in such a way that there's enough suffering in that prison that the prisoners feel that there should be some reformation taking place. That there's some reformation taking place. We need to reform our character and get out of this prison and get on some, what do they call it? Good behavior, early release for good behavior. So similarly, we're in this intricate place that's been made with all these different elements, and we're realizing more and more day to day that the more we're trying to lord over material nature, the more we're trying to control, the more that we are getting slapped about by the material world. And it's just the way it's meant to be. The misery of this material world, it shouldn't be a shock, it shouldn't be a surprise. The anxiety we face shouldn't be a shock, it shouldn't be a surprise, because that's the feature of the material world. Just like if you go to the North Pole and say, oh, I'm so cold, I'm so cold, I'm so cold. Yeah, it's cold, but it's meant to be cold up there. It's meant to be cold. So similarly, we're in the material world. Oh, I've got this problem, I've got that problem, I've got this problem, I've got that problem. Yeah, but that's the feature of the material world, dukkha-layam. It's meant to have problems. It's meant to have suffering. That's the overall residing feature of the material world. So when we're, oh, life's so hard, life's so difficult. People in the North Pole aren't saying, oh, it's so cold, it's so cold. They get their jackets on and they get warmed up and they deal with the symptom of the place, the overriding factor of the place. So the material world is designed for misery. The material world is designed to give us dukkha. And we, in coming into Krishna consciousness and practicing spiritual life, are wearing those big thick jackets that we would have to wear in the North Pole, and wearing these thick jackets of the Lord's protection through the association of devotees. Because by associating with the devotees, we are being protected by the miseries that the material world is giving to us. So we are trying to control, we're going about our life, whether it's small things, big things. My 8-year-old daughter just said to me recently, Papa, stop controlling me. You know, 8 years old, I thought she might wait till she was 18, but it's 8, you know. So we're trying to control. And why? Because that's why we came to the material world. We see Krishna, he gets to control everything. So why can't we control? But we're not happy because control isn't our constitutional position. Lording, being the master, that's not our constitutional position. That's not our position of satisfaction. That's not our place of experiencing inner happiness. Our inner happiness is only going to be experienced when we live according to our constitutional position, Jiva Swarupoi, Krishnera Nitya Das. We are going to only experience our internal happiness when we act on the platform of being the servant of the Lord. So Krishna creates this place so that we can experience a bit of lording, a bit of control. And we realize one day that actually it's just not working out. is not working out. I can't control my kids. I can't control my body. I can't control anything. Actually, I can't control anything. Because Ishvara Parama Krishna. Krishna is the controller. And if we come to that understanding that Krishna is the controller, then we can leave our situations in Krishna's hands. So we shouldn't, there's that famous saying, I'm sure we all know it, that we don't need to tell God how big our problems are. We can tell our problems how big God is. So we don't need to tell God how big our problems are. We can tell our problems how big God is. Krishna can help us overcome all our problems. Problems are there. We're all going to have problems. We're going to have a problem every day. There's something. Nothing is smooth sailing, even on a daily basis. There's going to be some problem or the other that we have to sort out, we have to fix. So these elaborate plans are being made, and one day the jiva in one lifetime will start to question, what is going on? What is going on? And we'll start to question, okay, how did the world get created? Like at some point we get to that understanding, okay, it couldn't have been a bang. Right, in one lifetime or the other, we'll come to it can't be by chance, because how? You know, we have so many examples that nothing is created without some intelligence, nothing is created without some design, some laws, some plans. So there must be a someone. There must be a someone. I remember being a teenager, and me and my friends, we would take intoxicating substances, and we would lie down on the grass and look at the sky and look at all the stars, and I remember saying to my friends one day, how did all this happen? Like, what's going on beyond there, man? You know, I was just like, and my friends would be like, just shut up, like, you know, just enjoy this moment. And I'd try and like get into some sort of conversation. What's happening, and is there other planets? And I'll try and ask these questions to my friends, but they'd just tell me, look, just be quiet, enjoy the, just stop killing the high, they would say to me, you know. So then we come to realize actually the high that we're looking for doesn't need to come crashing down like it used to do when I was a teenager, because when we're taking these type of substances, it doesn't last. So when we come to question these the creation, we can see that actually, and when we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we can see that actually it's done with so much intelligence, so much thought that when we even try to think about it, it's like, oh my Lord, I can't get my head around this. Okay, so there's sound, and then from sound that we experience the ether from the sound, and then comes air, and because of the air we got touch, and then from the touch, from the air, and then we got fire, and because of fire there is form, and then there's water, and because of water there is taste, and then we go to the earth, which appears odorous. So Krishna is allowing us to understand the intricacies of the creation, and even that, we're only being given what we're meant to know. There might even be more behind this. Who knows? But according to what we've been given, this is very deep, this is very intricate. And we need to experience this, we need to understand this so that we can appreciate that Krishna is so great. We need to appreciate the greatness of the Lord. And this is why it's said that we can't just jump to the 10th canto, go straight for Rasa Leela and Govardhan Hill and straight for the intimate pastimes of the Lord without understanding the greatness of the Lord. That same person, yes, he's dancing with so many gopis, and yes, he can be accused that he's womanizing, but that same person has created this material world with so much intricacy. And when we can appreciate his greatness, and we can appreciate what he's doing for us so that we can turn to him, we can appreciate that these intimate pastimes of the Lord are not selfish, are not for his own personal enjoyment or personal ego. Actually, this is all for all of us. We get to hear about the rasa dance because we can hear. And Krishna didn't have to tell us about it. Well, we know the pastimes. We know the pastimes that are in the Bhagavatam that are meant for us to hear. We know the pastimes that the acharyas have given us. And the pastimes we don't know, we don't know. The pastimes are limited. But Krishna has given us what we are meant to know, what he wants us to know, so that we can develop a deep loving relationship with him. And that deep loving relationship with him can only occur if we have an appreciation for how great he is. And these descriptions of the creation are giving us an insight as to the greatness of the Lord, the intelligence of the Lord, so to create this material world with so much thought. Like when we're trying to make something, we need a lot of thought, but we also need a lot of help. Like if I buy something from IKEA, I really get wound up when my wife buys something from IKEA, because then I know I'm going to have to help make it. You know, and that for me is like a whole day thing. It's not just like for most people it might be 1 or 2 hours. For me, I've got to wipe out a whole day in the diary to like make a cupboard this big, you know. But with that, what do we need? We need instructions. We need to know what goes where and how to build it. And then finally, you get this little thing that we'll enjoy for a little while before it breaks. But the thought comes with some instruction. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, is the source of all instruction. He is the source of all instruction. He instructs us how to get out of this material world. So we are trying to go about our day to practice. We're trying to practice devotional service. And by practicing devotional service, we are becoming purified. And through this purification of the heart, we get to understand the more subtle aspects of Krishna consciousness. So when we first come to spiritual life and we hear about the modes of material nature, it's like, whoa, the modes. You know, it's just like, all right, cool. You know, and then as the years go by and we practice devotional service, we can try and understand the modes in a bit. We can try and understand the modes in our day-to-day life. That, okay, there's the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness, there's the mode of passion, there's the mode of ignorance. Niskinchana Prabhu gave a really nice talk yesterday. He was explaining how we could use the modes in the Lord's service, and how we can, for example, we can use the mode of ignorance to take rest. But that rest can be sanctified sleep, as Sachinandan Maharaj explains, because the purpose of that rest is to practice devotional service. I remember when we were on Govardhan retreat some years back, and Maharaj was explaining that if we take rest, then we'll be able to stay awake during the seminars. We should take good rest. So what was happening was, I was at the Govardhan, and it's like back-to-back seminars. And then what I did after the second day, after hearing Maharaj say this, in the afternoon, before the afternoon class, I'd have like a 30 or 40 minute nap. So we used the mode of ignorance to take that little nap. And that was so good, because then in the afternoon, I'd be awake enough to hear the classes without falling asleep during the seminars. So there are the modes of material nature that Krishna has given, or should we say Krishna has used as ingredients of this material world, so that those of us that want to forget the Lord can primarily situate themselves in the mode of ignorance, because he's fulfilling their desire. And those of us that want to regulate our lives and get on the right platform back to Krishna can try and situate ourselves in the mode of goodness. When Prabhupada first came to the West, he gets to Boston. He's not, you know, an old Indian gentleman getting to the Western world for the first time. Most people who come from India, who come to the West, like, whoa, look at this place, look at this, and, you know. But when Prabhupada came here, came to the West in the 60s, the first thing he says is, this place is full, it's overpowered by the modes of passion and mode of ignorance. He could see, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Bhagwan Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Gornitai Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Prabhupada understood that the Western world is over influenced by the lower modes of material nature, and Krishna here is explaining how the different modes of material nature created all the different aspects of the Lord in the first place. Rashoham Apshukonteya, Krishna says that I am the taste in water. So how is water and taste connected? Sometimes we think, how is water and taste? Sometimes, isn't water tasteless? But you know, we go to one country, the water does taste different to the water in another country. Water has something. But actually, if we go into the intricate detail, how do we digest food? We have saliva. And saliva is water with some digestive chemical. And if we didn't have saliva, we wouldn't be able to taste anything. When we're cooking, water is needed for everything we cook. And if we, like even chapati, if we don't have enough water in chapati, it's so dry, it's so tasteless. So Krishna is explaining that, yes, water, he is the taste in water, and we could see it in a very, oh, well, water doesn't taste of anything. But if we really think about it, without water, there is no taste. There is no taste. And Srila Prabhupada explains that, yes, sound creates sound, or should we say sound is the beginning. But he also speaks about that, yes, there's material sound and there is spiritual sound. And that spiritual sound can give us access to the spiritual world. Spiritual sound can give us access or entry to the spiritual world. So sound is so powerful. I was thinking that last year, when we had the pandemic, anyone who watches football, I sometimes watch football, I must admit. confession time. And football, watching a football match was so boring because there was no crowd, and because there was no crowd, there was no sound. And if the world of if the product, actually it's a product of the material world that's used to sell, make millions and billions of pounds every year, because so many people, because of demand and supply, what actually people are paying for, all these television subscriptions people are paying for, is actually sound. Because football would not have been able to sell as a product if there was no crowd, and if there was no crowd, there'd have been no sound. Because actually, I began to realize that what a boring game it is. When there's no crowd, it's actually, it was so dry. I couldn't get through 5 minutes of watching a match because there was no sound. So sound is so powerful. Sound is making millions and billions in this material world. And that's material sound. But spiritual sound takes us beyond the material world. Spiritual sound takes us to the spiritual world. So it's up to us which sound we want to access. It's up to us which sound we want to give out through our vocal cords, through our voice box. We have free will. We have free will. We are the ones with the free will. We have the choice what to make, and then material nature carries out ultimately by the sanction of the super soul. And if we choose to speak sweet words, it's said, isn't it, that when a guest comes to your house, we should offer them a seat and speak sweet words. I mean, it's very simple. Offer them a seat, give them some water, and speak as a minimum. You know, offer a seat, give them some water, speak some kind words. Speak some kind words. So there's this austerity of speech that it's such a forgotten thing. It's a forgotten thing because what happens is we start to take our devotee relationships quite lightly. As the years go by, he's such and such, and he's annoying, he snores, or he does this, or whatever it is. And we tend to judge others maybe by just one or two mistakes that they can make. And also we don't always think before we speak. And therefore what happens is we use sound in a negative way. And when sound is used in a negative way, then this can create all types of turmoil while we're trying to practice devotional service. Now when we say, oh, we can't practice Krishna consciousness if we're making offenses, We know that we can't practice Krishna consciousness when we're making offences, because it's the one thing we're told: don't make offence and practice your spiritual life. Don't make offence and practice your spiritual life. But this offence is caused by sound. This offence is caused by the sound. We can do a few things without using sound, like we can try and manipulate their life, you know, if we're really evil. But generally the mistake that devotees make is with using the sound that we can express. We can express gratitude, or we can express harsh and evil words, harsh and unkind words. But a Vaishnava is naturally very kind. A Vaishnava is naturally very kind. And when we are being unkind, we know that actually we're not using this facility that's given to us by the Supreme Lord in the correct way. Because sound is so powerful that it's said that people even in a coma, they can still hear. So when someone is leaving their body, what are we doing? We're going to see them in the hospital or on their bedside, and we're chanting Hare Krishna, we're reading Krishna book, even if they're responding, not responding, because we know that the last faculty that goes is sound. So sound in one sense is the beginning and is the end. So we have an opportunity to use the facilities given to us by the Lord to have really wonderful relationships with devotees. And if we have really nice, wonderful relationships with devotees, we stay in Krishna consciousness. Devotees that generally leave the movement is generally because, I mean, there's lots of different reasons, but one of the reasons, one prominent reason is not having strong association. And we don't have strong association if we are not kind to the devotees, or if we don't forgive the devotees when a mistake has been made. So for example, when Ram and Sita and Lakshman were in the forest, and Ram goes to chase the deer, because Mother Sita looks at the deer and she says, "Oh, I want that deer." And Ram says, "Okay, I'll get you the deer. You've been here for 13 years. You've done all this austerity. You want a deer to take back to Ayodhya? No problem." Lakshman knew straight away that this is no deer. This does not look like one of the 8.4 million species of life. There's something wrong. Why is this deer on its own? You know, normally if there's animals, there's others around it. Lakshman knew. So then Ram went to chase the deer. And then once the deer, who we know is Marichi, goes really, really far into the forest. And Marichi uses sound. He uses sound. He imitates Ram's voice and says, "Sita, Lakshman, save me." So he uses sound. He uses sound, but he uses sound to create destruction. He uses sound to create destruction. And then when Sita hears this, Sita is saying, "Lakshman, go and save your brother." And Lakshman, with full faith, knows nothing can happen to Ram. No one can defeat Ram. Full faith. Shadavanto, with full faith. So Lakshman knows with full faith there is nothing that can disturb Ram. No one can defeat Ram. But Sita says, "You must go. He's in big trouble. He would not call out like that." And Lakshman holds his ground. "No, I'm not going, because Ram told me to protect you. Ram told me." So he's obeying the instructions of the Lord. Even though Lakshman's nature is to fight. He's a Kshatriya. His nature is to fight. But he knew his service at that moment was to protect Sita. But then Sita used sound. She used her words. And she said, "Lakshman, are you just staying here because you want Ram to be defeated and you want to enjoy me for yourself?" And that pierced Lakshman in the heart. It pierced Lakshman in the heart, and he prayed to the four directions, and he knew something was going to happen. He knew something was going to happen. And then he went to Ram. And then we know that by that time Ram's running back and he sees Lakshman and he's like, "Oh my God, you left." And by the time they get back, Ravana has kidnapped Sita. After Sita is rescued, did Lakshman say to Sita, "Why did you say that to me? You know, no, because he understood the situation was tense. And in that tense situation, our close devotee friend might say something. They might say something. But does that mean we forget all the years and years of nourishment, kindness, love that the devotees have given us? Do we forget that because of a mistake? Now, that doesn't mean that we should go around saying something and, you know, we take, you know, for the insulter, we have a different lesson, and for the insulted, there's a different lesson. For the insulter, the lesson can be that, yes, words are more harmful than a sword. A word is more harmful than a sword. So the insulter can learn from that. For the insulted, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So we can have different affirmations that can help us according to where we're at. Because the goal is to have loving relationships with devotees, because it's the loving relationships with devotees that can help us and help us with our relationship with the Lord. That's the whole purpose of devotee relationships. So it's said, isn't it, when someone is, we're so kind to devotees when they're new. We go out, we preach, and we preach, and we preach, and we bring devotees in. And then we kind of forget about them. Or we kind of just fry them out. You know, it's like, it's said that when we, this saying in India is, when devotees are new, we give them fried pakora. And once devotees are in, we fry them like pakora. You know? So this is sometimes our thing. Once they're in, that's done, I've done my job. They'll sort the rest out themselves, you know. They'll sort the rest of their life out themselves, and they'll work it all out, you know. Just do your service. You know, but actually we have an obligation to look after each other. We have an obligation to Srila Prabhupada, who spent years and years preparing to come here and selflessly looked after all the devotees, and then he empowered the devotees to look after the other devotees who were coming as the movement grew and grew and grew. So our obligation is to look after each other. Our obligation is not to fry each other out like pakora, but give each other fried pakoras. Because otherwise, what happens is Krishna consciousness can just become like a business. That we have a certain service and we talk to each other just about, just with the consciousness of getting something done. But actually, having loving relationships with each other through the power of sound is very, very prominent. Saying kind words, glorifying the devotees, it goes such a long way. Some gentle encouragement, it goes such a long way. It goes, acknowledging what devotees have done for us, it goes such a long way. And we think, oh, this devotee is so senior, they don't need my acknowledgement. I think even senior devotees like to have, because we're all human beings, we're all persons, some acknowledgement. It's acknowledgement and appreciation is very different to flattering. So flattering is in somewhat, it kind of borders offense because it's not real. But genuine appreciation, a devotee can feel genuine appreciation. And that appreciation is good for the one appreciating, and appreciation is really, it's nice for the one being appreciated because it's genuine. And when it's genuine, what happens? A deep loving relationship is formed. A connection is formed. And that connection is deep because Krishna's in the center. That appreciation is an appreciation for encouragement in Krishna consciousness. And when there's appreciation based on encouragement in Krishna consciousness, what happens? That Krishna is in the center of the relationship. And when Krishna is in the center of the relationship, that relationship blossoms. And that relationship can become so, we can say, so connected in such a way that we have trust. And when there's trust between devotees, then devotees don't feel like leaving because we have devotees we can trust. So whether we are new to this movement or whether we've been around for many, many, many years, there is no reason to not speak kind words to each other. There's no kind of, oh, I'm now the big shot and now I don't need to be kind. I don't, or just blank others because they're just, You know, they're just insignificant. You know, once I've reached a certain stage, I don't need to talk to that one. No, because we're not in the corporate world. We're trying to practice what it's like in the spiritual world. And what it's like in the spiritual world, it's full of bliss. And it's full of love. And it's full of kindness. And it's full of cooperative service. And cooperative service can only happen if we love each other and have good relationships. So we can use this wonderful aspect of sound that Krishna has given us in the right way, in the devotional way, in a way that we can glorify each other and ultimately glorify Krishna together. And when we glorify Krishna together, there is no better feeling that any of us could ever experience. So we'll stop there. It's 8:30. Thank you all for your kind attention. Does anyone have any comments, questions, or corrections on today's verse? Jay, okay, thank you very much. Oh, yes, Prabhuji.
I really like your sentiment, Prabhu. Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Jay. Great. I was really hoping no one asked me any intricate questions on all of the sound and all this. So I'm very, very grateful. We're gonna go for prasadam. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.